From KCRW.com, this is Here Be Monsters.
I stood in the middle of a dirt road holding two giant Tupperware containers. Inside the Tupperwares were all of those possessions that signaled my adolescence. A pair of headphones, an alarm clock, toenail clippers, a roll of duct tape, the anthology of Redwall novels, and a new pair of winter boots. I waved goodbye to my parents, who had just boarded a yellow school bus piloted by a man who looked like a caricature of Jesus, but instead of wearing a white robe, he wore Carhartt coveralls. The bus trundled back down the dirt road, through the smooth pine-forested hills, down the treacherously steep switchbacks, back down to the boat dock where a ferry would take them to their parked car, which would take them back across the state of Washington, back to their home. It was the home that, until earlier today, I'd called my home as well. That home was quiet, out in the countryside of eastern Washington, punctuated only by sounds of cars blasting across distant gravel roads and horse whinnies and dogs singing hateful duets with the coyotes at night. I wondered if I'd made some kind of critical error in my teenage judgment. I'd only ever been here to this village once before, and it was under vastly different circumstances. I came up here for a church trip. And that time it was crawling with other visiting teenagers, along with their doting adults and loudly charismatic youth pastors visiting from distant cities. But now the village was quieter. The village itself was the relic of a mining town that once boomed and then busted in the middle of Washington's Cascade Mountain Range. After decades of bankruptcy and abandonment, it was eventually turned into a Lutheran retreat center. I was in the village because I applied and had been accepted into the small public school meant for the children of the village staffers. However, each year they'd also take a couple kids from what they called the real world and let them experience the village life. Village life was not something I was prepared for, though. I didn't know it at the time, but the village had a propensity for attracting people who weren't readily accepted elsewhere. So in the year to come, I would meet my first anarchists, my first Benedictine nuns, my first lesbians, my first Buddhists, and my first telepathic communicators. 3 giant peaks loomed above the village. Each evening, the biggest of the 3 mountains, Mount Dumbbell, would prematurely swallow up the sun, plunging the village into an artificially long dusk that bathed everything in a brilliant purple. And later, I would learn that on nice winter days, I could sit out on the porches outside, wearing sunglasses, and watch the avalanches roll down the steep and distant slopes, a faint rumbling sound barely audible. Of course, as I stood there on the road waving at that school bus, I didn't know any of this. What I knew is that I was out of place, a stranger in my new home, and the excitement that I felt was muted by a sense of potential dread. So I picked up my giant tubs of belongings and carried them off to my new house.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
big cats in the wilderness.
The podcast about
the unknown.
On one of my first nights in the village, I walked into the dining hall to overhear the tail end of a conversation that sounded interesting. It was the bus driver that I initially mistook for Jesus wearing coveralls. He explained to a small but rapt audience how, for the last decade, he'd been searching these woods for cougars. He said that sometimes, when he's walking in the woods, he'd feel eyes pierce him from the trees, and he'd spin around only to see nothing. Despite feeling that he'd been stalked by big cats for years, he'd still never actually seen one. He said that cougars only show themselves when they want to be seen. But otherwise, they just stay in the shadows. I I started school several days later, and I met my high school classmates, all 9 of them. Not 9 in my grade, but 9 in the whole school. They all knew each other, they had shared stories that they told to each other, they had inside jokes, a communal language that I lacked. I saw them and I immediately wanted to be them. They were more worldly, more poised, more comfortable with themselves than I had ever been. My teacher was this kind, flower-childy mother in her 40s. Strands of gray tucked into her hair, she talked a lot about the Indigo Girls. She used to be a park ranger, and it was only a matter of days before she decided that, as a class, we would hike many miles up into the mountains for an overnight camping trip. So I gathered the equipment that I had, and I borrowed the rest. And then, one morning, at the first hint of dawn, I joined the rest of my school down on the dirt road at the end of the village, where I pulled on my heavy pack, and we all headed out westward with the sun at our back, following the creek's winding path up the valley, and for the second time now, I left behind a place that I was just beginning to know as home. My feet stepped gingerly along the path. We walked through the groves of alpine conifers, past mountain lakes and through high meadows, and we crossed wide fields of scree. We saw deer, marmots, and tiny chipmunks called pika, and we walked across a dried riverbed where the round river stones wobbled and clacked under my feet as I walked across them. And all the while I felt uneasy. For hours we climbed in altitude, slowly tracing the creek back to its unseen mountain source, and as we rounded the top of a small hill, I looked over my shoulder to see the peak of Mount Dumbell fade back over the horizon. And then I felt those eyes stab me in the back. It was that feeling, a feeling that's unprovably true or false, that feeling of being watched. I felt those eyes come at me from a rock outcropping behind me to my right, and I was immediately reminded of what I'd heard in the dining hall from the man wearing the coveralls. Of course, I said nothing to my classmates, because I want them to like me. It wasn't as if I could say something absurd to them in that moment. And that's exactly what this perception was. It was absurd. There's no way around that. Eventually, we reached our campsite in a clearing near a lake. As the sunlight began to fade, my classmates ran up into the nearby hills and I followed them. Above the lake, on the hills, were these giant boulders. Eons ago, they had tumbled down here from the slopes above, coming to their rest here, stacked on top of one another, looking like strange statues or monuments to a forgotten religion. My classmates crawled over the rocks and admired the unfamiliar skyline. They explored the small caves beneath the rocks too, squeezing their bodies beneath and praying that the earth didn't shift in that moment and crush them. Again, from the distance, I felt the cougar's eyes pierce me. It had followed me here. I felt my whole body shiver so strongly that I prematurely scurried back down the hill and into my sleeping bag, outside, underneath the stars. As darkness set in earnest, I was soon joined by the others. They pointed out the Big Dipper as it emerged, then Pegasus, Draco, Cassiopeia. Then the clouds came that obscured the stars. I felt still a stranger in the presence of my classmates. The first fat drop of rain that fell in that rainstorm hit me square between the eyes. Soon the others felt the drops too and hurried off to the tents to escape the oncoming storm. And I wrongly assumed that it would pass shortly, so I stayed out a little while longer. And then a warm wind began blowing around me and the trees became alive with sound as they too felt the drops and waved their branches in the wind. Small animals around me became restless. A tiny field mouse ran panicked laps around the campsite, stopping near me for a moment to try and figure out why I didn't join her in running in frenetic circles. 20 feet to my left, just outside of our clearing, I heard a padded foot snap a twig. I immediately understood the fear of the field mouse, but unlike the mouse, my body's response was immediate paralysis. I lay there, motionless in my sleeping bag, with every muscle in my body tensed. The wind continued to blow, and then, 20 feet directly behind my head, I heard the second twig. The only feeble motion that I was able to muster was the motion of pulling the sleeping bag around my face, leaving space only for my mouth, nose, and eyes. By the time the third twig snapped off to my right, I was able to break the paralysis and dash off to finally join the others in the tent. The thin fabric of the tent provided no protection, but choosing to forget this fact was the only reason I ever slept that night. Regardless, it was a nervous and a fraught sleep. I woke up the next morning to the popping sound of heavy raindrops on the tent roof. I felt exhausted, and it was storming in earnest now. I packed up the wet tent and joined the rest of the group. On our long trek back to the village, we hiked through those same high meadows, across the piles of scree, through the tree groves, and past the lakes. The landscape was familiar, but now transformed into a green, glistening, spongy version of itself, and I looked at my feet while I walked, taking care to dodge the puddles that had formed on the trail overnight. Hiking gives me circular thoughts, thoughts that tumble around in my brain over and over again, buffing and refining themselves slowly, making smooth transitions from one form to the next, and as we walked, I kept tumbling around that same thought from the night before, the sound of those twigs snapping around me. I was anxious, and I still wasn't fitting in with the group. We hiked in the rain for hours. I scanned the landscape for signs of the big cat that I knew was still stalking me. I listened for the sound of padded feet. I watched the trail for big paw prints. I paid attention to my peripheral vision, straining to be observant without revealing my fear to my classmates. No one else seemed to notice the occasional roaring sound off in the distance. I was anxious to get home. About 3 miles from the village, the roaring sound had become louder and closer. I rounded a corner and promptly walked straight into the back of one of my classmates. She had stopped dead in her tracks. And I looked up and I saw her reason for stopping. Because there, in the middle of that dried riverbed we'd crossed before, stood something else entirely. It was angry, and it was roaring, and it was the culmination of the gathered trickles of water from the night's rainstorm, which had funneled down into that dried riverbed, which was no longer dry. The water raced and buffeted off of obstacles, threatening to sweep away and destroy anything that dared to enter it. But we had few options. There were no phones, no bridges, no alternate path around it. So my teacher opened her pack and pulled out a length of rope. She tied one end around her waist and one end around a nearby tree. Then she stepped into the water and braced as the first wave struck her. Her each step was deliberate, and each step was measured. She moved slowly. And as she walked, my mind played imaginary scenes from horror movies and news headlines. I imagined waking daymares that never manifested, for she reached the opposite bank and tied her end of the rope to a sturdy tree. I grabbed the rope and stepped into the water. I felt the surprising warmness of the river water. I too braced myself against the current. I felt the teetering rocks slip and move beneath me, and again,
My mind played the scenes from the horror movies and news headlines of a drowned teenager who had been swept away downstream before ever realizing that he had an incredible propensity to misattribute his fears to big cats in the wilderness.
And eventually I reached the far bank, collapsed in the dirt, shaking from adrenaline, utterly soaked. And then I watched as one by one my classmates crossed the river, all arrived safely, crumpling near me on the ground. As I stood up, my socks squelched in the tiny oceans that had formed inside my boots. There would be no point in dodging the puddles anymore. So I pulled up my pack and looked up to see that giant semi-familiar mountain had re-emerged from the horizon. We were almost home. I felt a crushing anxiety melt off my body as I started down the path again. There are few feelings more joyful than the feeling of not dying. And I don't even remember who started it, but soon we broke into this lopsided jog. We ran down the trail, yelling and singing and laughing all at once, and for the first time I felt equal to my classmates, worthy of their friendship. I'd managed to participate in one of those stories that would eventually enter our collective memory. Those next 9 months would be good ones, some of the best of my life. These people would teach me lessons in friendship, love, and humility. They would teach me to start recognizing the strange monsters my mind creates to deal with anxiety. Of course, I didn't know any of this at the time. But as we ran down the trail homewards, each puddle I stomped in sent the cool and sinister eyes of the cougar melting back into the shadows from which they came.
Here Be Monsters is produced by Jeff Emptman and me, Bethany Denton. Our editor at KCRW is Nick White. On this episode, you heard music from Swamp Dog and Cyracel, and also from Flowers, who's a Seattle-based producer making fantastically haunting music like that riff you heard during the hiking in this episode. Find links to all of our musicians at hbmpodcast.com. And while you're there, check out the image gallery that accompanies this show. You'll find pictures of the village and pictures of the mountains and pictures of Jeff as a teenager and even a picture of that river, but no pictures of cougars. Again, we're at hbmpodcast.com. All right, thanks for listening. More episodes soon.